I don't need a script anymore. I think I'm three meetings in. The House Committee on Agriculture, Natural Resources, and Rural Communities into order. It's January 29th, 2009. First, we're going to open an informational hearing, and this is the entire agenda for today, is to discuss the firefighting program that the Department of Forestry and a variety of private partners provide to Oregon, and it's a model program that you'll get to hear some of the examples about how we lead the probably the world, if not the nation, in how we go about dealing with our fire issues on the lands in Oregon. We are going to do public testimony. We've got 100 miler, but first we're going to do some invited testimony from the agency and a couple user groups, and then we've got my cell phone's here.
Okay. I never bring one.
Mine's not doing
points.
Anything.
No, that's, I think it's. Yeah. Mary's was on, so I could call her and explain why I was late. So with, why don't we get started with Paul Bell, Department of Forestry.
Good morning, Chair Klim and members of the committee. Really appreciate the opportunity to come and provide information today. I am Paul Bell with the Oregon Department of Forestry. I'm the Fire Protection Division Chief for the department. And I think you should have a copy of my testimony and kind of what how this is structured. Just before I start out, I'll let you know is that I've got a couple of pages of written testimony, then I've attached several charts just that hopefully we can kind of walk through, and I think it'd be more informative than that as we move through.
Yeah, and those program charts help. It's very, very useful.
As Chair Klim mentioned, Oregon's fire protection system is one of the best in the western U.S., if not in the nation. The program protects about 15.8 million acres from wildfire, a little more than half the forest land in the state. Most of these lands are privately owned or managed by the Bureau of Land Management. Areas protected also include about 3.5 million acres of what we call wildland urban interface, or you'll hear the term WUI, which are forest lands with residences and structures within the reach of wildfire. Wildfires in Oregon are caused approximately a third by the public, about a third by the landowners, and then about a third naturally by lightning. The program operates in three primary areas of fire prevention, fire suppression, and treatment of forest fuels. The program is delivered through a coordinated field and staff organization. The field function includes 14 forest protection districts across the state. Three of those forest protection districts are private nonprofit associations and are fully landowner associations. Each forest protection district provides the basic fire suppression services of planning and prevention, detection, initial attack, and fuels management, all at the local level. The districts are responsible for providing one of the most effective initial attack systems available. We take as quick of action as we can on fires when detected and put them out when they're small. And that's a real important point as you look at Oregon's fire protection system. A cornerstone of the department's successful protection system is a long-standing private landowner-state partnership that's existed since 1911. Landowners work closely with their respective protection districts, and I think you'll get a chance to hear from some of those folks today. But what they do is they work with that district to determine what the adequate level of protection is for that certain geographic area of the state. They review the district's budgets and come to consensus on what that budget for protection should be in that area, which is then forwarded on up to the state forester. They're very effective in assisting us with fire prevention and then play just a huge role in helping and support in the suppression system itself of on the ground, actually putting the fires out. Through annual assessments, landowners currently pay up to 50% of the district's and Salem's headquarters staff cost, and through the Oregon Forest Land Protection Fund, They pay up to $15 million annually for large fire costs, along with sharing with the state in half of the cost for the insurance premium. Oregon is very unique. We have a one-of-a-kind only catastrophic wildfire insurance policy that after we expend our deductibles, then that policy of an amount of about $25 million becomes available to the state for large fire suppression. And just want to stress, because as we deal with these budget issues as we go through the session, that, again, that's we're the only agency or organization nationwide for sure, and we believe worldwide, that has that insurance policy in place. And it's been in effect basically since the early 70s, and we've managed to maintain that by maintaining that initial attack system out there.
And just spend another moment on that. So who's our carrier?
Lloyd's of London.
Oh, I thought that's right.
And actually, I mean, the insurance policy is put together from a consortium of folks. We use a local firm out of Portland that then solicits, but Lloyd's comes in with the significant portion of it. And the insurance policy is actually built in tiers of companies coming in on the first level of it and the second level of it and the third level of it.
Mm-hmm. And at least our belief is that the reason we can even get this policy is because of this other system of prevention and quick attack, because otherwise no one's going to want to insure people who aren't good at getting the claims down.
Exactly. Now, over the life of the time the state has had the insurance policy, we have actually went into it about 13 different times. Last time was in 2002. 2002 was an extremely catastrophic year for fire for the state of Oregon, and we went right into the policy that year. But over the whole lifetime that we've had it, we've been fairly successful at staying out of it, and that's again what we try to do. You know, I mean, the for the Department of Forestry, the whole primary mission when it comes to fire is we're here to put those fires out. The state and the landowners are paying us to put those fires out now, and that's what we're focused on doing.
Representative Roebling.
I just want to ask a question, because the general setup is that we have this $25,000, $25 million that we have to pay as our deductible, and then it kicks in for the next 25. And that used to be 20 a few years back because the insurance coverage took over at a $20 deductible, as I remember. And then we shifted it 25 to keep the insurance cost reasonable.
I believe it used to be $15 million.
15, that's right.
And
okay.
then as you go back over time, the deductible has been less and less as you go back. But
right.
As we've been forward, it's built.
But the landowners have a portion of that. They pay $15 million, right? Now, over the last number of years, we have not actually gotten into the catastrophic. Is that true?
True.
And so, disproportionately, the shift has gone to the landowner. If you look at the total amount of being paid for this policy.
Yes.
And so,
and just to clarify, I don't even think we got into the state's portion prior to the policy.
Right.
Yeah.
So the way it has been structured to this point, the landowners have, in fact, paid the brunt of that cost over the last number of years. Is that correct?
Chair Klim, Representative Roebling, that is correct. And in my testimony,
right. Okay.
I've kind of laid that out. I mean, basically, as you look at the last 4 years, we've averaged about $11 million annually. It's gone up and down, but we have not crossed over the $15 million into the state's portion of that deductible. If you turn to the first handout in the page, we have our process laid out, and this works really well to look at how we're currently set up and how we could change as we move into the next biennium. But if you look on the left side of the chart, that's right now today, shows how we're currently structured, and basically, that's, if you look at the bottom of the Pulaski, the first $36 million is that, are those district protection budgets. That's that base level of protection is for preparedness and initial attack. and that's currently split on a 50-50 basis between the landowner assessments and the state. One point I would make is public landowners that are in this assessment pay 100% of the fire protection cost. There isn't a match with the state. So if you look at budget numbers, you'll see variance is in that 50-50. It can be more, depending on the amount of public land you have in a district, more like 40-60 land. But that's all part of the process of leveraging that landowner dollar that comes into the system.
Mr. Chair?
Yeah?
Yes, Representative Shoffler.
On that right there, but don't states around the region pay all that on that assessment? Other states pay 100% of it, and we're only paying 50% of it. Is that correct?
Chair Klim, Representative Shoffler, I have a chart couple pages more back in here and go over that in a lot more detail. But it's variable on that prevention side. But by far, Oregon landowners pay a higher rate for that than
Chair,
anywhere else.
Yeah, may I? Does it take 36 votes to change that assessment? Do you know that in the House?
Chair Klim, Representative Shoffler, no, I don't know that. I'm sure one of
anybody
folks behind me
may
have a...
Oh, it doesn't. That's unfortunate.
But if we can run through this chart
we'll
real
quick. We'll probably get most of our questions, because I was about to jump into something and I read it on page two. So
thank you.
Go ahead, Chair.
But what I wanted to show you was the different pieces of the fire funding that are there. So we talked about the first piece, the basic protection. The next chunk of funding that's out there is to purchase the insurance premium on an annual basis. That's split 50-50 between the Oregon Forest Land Protection Fund and the state. The next chunk up is the special purpose appropriation that the legislature appropriates sometime during the season or during the session. And last year for severity resources, or last biennium, is $4.4 million. So we just split that in two in here. Because what gets really confusing in this is dealing, the legislature mostly deals with biennial budgets. Fire operates on an annual budget, and so we have to... work within that system. This gets to the next block on here gets to Representative Roblin's point. It is the first chunk of the deductible, and it is $15 million, and that's paid 100% out of the landowner's fund. The next piece of that deductible is $10 million, and that's paid for with general fund. At this point in time, since this current structure has been placed, we have not had to access that. We come really close in 2007. We hit, in the end, just over $13 million of expenditures, but did not get into that. Then once those are expended, then the fire insurance policy kicks in for $25 million, and then if we ended up going through the top of that, we would be back to the general fund to try and cover those costs. And put that a little bit in perspective, in 2007, the state of Montana had just a wildfire season, and the state in the end ended up paying out over $50 million for the suppression costs for that season. And so I wouldn't want to have been the fire chief coming down asking for that. And as you all know and have probably heard, California's system is a 100% funded general fund, and they're up to almost $1 billion in expenditures from their last fire season. And again, that's all state money. So if you take the 09 and compare it to the 010, as we're currently structured with the governor's recommended budget, that budget will shift the 50-50 portion for the district protection levels over to 45% for state funding and 55% for landowner funding. In the 45%, I'd want to point out that that's not all general fund either. A portion of it, about $2.23 million, will actually come out of our state forest development fund to make up that 45% difference. And then from that point on, the rest of the structure remains the same. I'm going to go back to my sheet here and get on track. So I do want want to talk a little bit about what that shift in funding does do, and I think some folks will give you some more detail on this, but I want to just real generally, if you take a Central Oregon district, somebody say out of Prineville or John Day, and they have 1,000 acres. That right this year, that landowner would have paid, and it's all timbered. That landowner would have paid $1,708 this year for the fire protection assessment. With a shift to 50-50 or 55%, that landowner would pay $1,879, or a increase of $171 within 1 year. So it's a significant difference. Now these rates are variable by district across the state, again based by levels of protection that those districts put in place. And so if you look at west side landowners, take one in eastern Lane County outside of Springfield, 1,000 acres of timberland, that landowner currently in this fiscal year is paying $1,145 with a shift to 55. They would end up with an increase of $114 in that rate. And again, that's just for 1,000 acres. The Oregon Forest Land Protection Fund that we've kind of talked about is managed by an emergency fire costs committee. This emergency fire costs committee is consists of four landowners, the representatives from across the state, and a committee administrator, and they manage that money that comes into that account, and also work to set with the state to set policy on the expenditures that come out of that. What the fund is for is to pay for those large fire costs. It equalizes the cost across the state, and what it does is it prevents any one district from absolutely going bankrupt in the system. A point somebody had made earlier is, well, the point I do want to make is in the 2005 legislative session, the annual expenditure limit to the fund was increased from $10 million to $15 million. This 10 to 15 sunsets every biennium. Back to the $10 million. So we will be have legislation in play now, which will be House Bill 2215, which will probably come before this committee. Is the current proposed legislation to renew that $15 million? So the important point is, you look at the Pulaski chart, is if that sunsets to $10 million, then under the current structure of the insurance deductible, the state's obligation to that would become $15 million. And just through the last legislative sessions, the community has been able to move that forward at $15 million. But that's going to become very important as we look at the burden that folks are facing in these costs.
So just put a fine point on that. In the last 4 years, private landowners have begun paying $5 million per biennium more than they had prior.
They have been exposed to $5 million more than they had prior.
Okay, got it. Yeah, so then you got to get into how much actually occurred, which we will, and then we'll see how often we got into that range that formerly the state would have taken over in there.
If you could turn to page 2 of the handouts, you'll see our thermometer. And what we do is we use this as a communication tool during the fire season with the legislature and the landowners to keep track of those expenditures. And so what we've done in this, just to be able to lay it out, is you can see the last 4 years' expenditures and within each year how they've approached that $15 million. And you could drop down and draw a line across at the $10 million level and see what the difference would have been for those years and how that would have been paid for.
So in 05 and 07, they had $2 million 1 year that otherwise formerly would have went to the state, and then in 07, $3 million more that otherwise would have went to the state.
And then
just, sorry, back on the base budgets, I think I had always been under a slight misimpression. So the state pays $18 million, roughly, in general fund, and then another $500,000 in insurance premium, and then another $2.2 million. And then we get into this chart on page two. So the gray box that says regular district budgets, if you go back one page, includes the half of the $36 million, half of the $1 million, all of the $2.2 million. Then you flip over essentially to page two, and that starts showing costs above that.
Yes. Page two shows the cost to, above, well, half of the insurance premium is in that $15 million, too. The fund's annual liability is $15 million for all those costs. It doesn't exceed that. So
when we're looking at 05, 06, 07, 08, there's $500,000 of general fund that's in those bars. You just said the insurance premium is part of that first $15
million? On the bars, the only cost in these bars on the thermometer graph are just fire costs.
Just actual fire.
Just it.
And so all of these end up being landowner borne because we didn't hit $15 million.
Correct.
So 100% landowner paid for at that level. The part that the general fund did pay for is down in the box that's called regular district budgets.
Correct.
And that's where we paid some.
Well, in the regular district budgets, that's the part that's split 50-50.
Yeah. Right. And is roughly, if we go back on page, $36 million.
Yes.
So the state paid $18 million. And then we got into this.
For the current fiscal year that we're in.
Oh, so
these are all
$6 million biennially.
Right. These are all fiscal figures that I deal with there.
But the state did pay the $2.3 million in the insurance premium. That's not part of the 36. Over their 18, they paid 50% of the insurance policy and 2.3, but certainly not as much as the $15 million the landowners were paying.
Yeah, right.
Chair Clem, Representative Roland, that is a really good point, is when the process was set back in the 2005 legislative session, that was part of the deal was you pick up that increased deductible to get a lower rate. So there was some savings in there. So taking the state's portion of that and investing it in the special purpose appropriation. Special purpose appropriation is what we use for our severity. It basically pays for the state's two air tankers, four helicopters, and then for moving and bringing on additional engine crews in front of lightning storms or large events. So, but that $2.2 million is state.
There's one other portion thank you. And there is one other portion that the landowners contribute to, and that is into that special appropriations. They do get an in-kind, or we actually should have a conversation at some point about an in-kind that they put up that really matches that or exceeds that, because if there is a fire, they will respond with their own equipment and other stuff and not charge the state for that.
Most definitely, Chair Clem, Representative Roblin, and what I have a little footnote down at the bottom that references it, and what Representative Roblin is referring to is the cost, the fire program's cost for the agency administration, and as the current funding for that comes from, in this biennium, I don't have that note on here, but the current funding for that is $2.8 million in general fund and $3.6 million that come out of the Forest Development Fund for this last biennium. And we are in the process of finalizing a report that the legislator gave us a budget note for that we'll be bringing before our subcommittee in Ways and Means in regards to the in-kind survey work we've done to try and look at that.
Senator Van Orman.
Thank you, Chair Clem. When you talk about the landowner, you're talking about the private landowner, or does that include the federal lands, or are they outside of this?
Chair Clem, Representative Van Orman, I am talking about the private landowner, State, county, Hood River County, forest lands, all fall within this system. And okay. then we do have a protection contract with the Bureau of Land Management where we protect all of the Western Oregon forest lands.
And where do they fall in your budget picture here?
They fall in that $36 million piece, in that basic level of protection. They are buying into our system for protection.
Okay. All right.
And what that does, and as we look at budget, that's a real good point to bring forward, if I could jump into that for a second. As we look at what happens with the budget and the level of protection, we sign a contract with the BLM to provide a level of protection for initial attack and large fire support. If we get into the situation of reducing that initial attack force on the ground, we will run the risk at some certain level in there of not being able to meet the requirements of that BLM contract. And that, you know, at that point in time, if we get there, that's about 2.5, 2.8 million acres that would come out of the system that we are currently distributing costs around, and the BLM would ramp up to provide that protection. The two good points there is that. Additionally, as you look at the level of protection, if that gets reduced, then you got to look at that in conjunction with what happens with that insurance policy out there. And if we would get to a point, right now we're concerned, you know, with looking at the economic issues that we have with funding the system, is as the insurance companies come in and make their proposals each year, they look at our level of protection which comes into calculating that premium. We will have to pay that premium by April for the next fiscal year. So all moving points in this.
Just one more point, then we're going to represent one guard. U.S. Forest Service just handles their own.
Chair,
they just let it burn.
Yeah, well,
exactly right.
I mean, by handle their own.
Exactly right.
That's natural.
That's correct. We work in very close partnership with the Forest Service, and the Forest Service brings a lot of resources to the table that if they're not engaged in their own fire, we're able to leverage those and bring those in, and we share those resources back and forth for the need, and so a good example of that is back before 2002, the Forest Service had 45 large air tankers with the issues that they had in grounding the fleet. Now they only have about 17 or 18. That makes it necessary now for the state of Oregon to secure their own air tankers to ensure that we have them available. In that area, what occurs is those are nationwide resources, and so if Montana's burning up, that's where those air tankers are going to be, and Oregon starts a fire if we don't have something to grab. And so that's what that special purpose appropriation is doing.
I had to test and see which of these two over here would say that first. Krieger beat Schaffler today by half a second. Representative Wingard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Chief, I just want to understand the you've described the landowner group, which is in your first chart, as private landowners and then other public entities like counties, and then also you have a contract with BLM. So as the costs increase and we get into these deductibles and the landowners are on the hook for this $15 million, You're saying then that the public landowners also contribute to that deductible, and that the BLM, your contract with the BLM, has them contributing as well?
To the insurance deductible on the chart at the top of page 3, it shows the revenue sources that support that $15 million. And all lands within the system do pay a per acre assessment that brings those dollars in. But all the pieces of it are the acreage assessments and then harvest tax. And so one portion with the harvest tax, where you'll see like the BLM not contributing as much into the system, is because of the harvest levels that have fallen off on federal lands. On the other hand, the BLM does have access to federal severity money. And like down in our Southwest Oregon district, down in Medford Grants Pass, at times we're able to bring money in through that system to help pay for severity resources, which would be where we build up for a lightning event coming in and that type of thing. But as you see on this, the largest payer into that Oregon Forest Land Protection Fund are landowners within protection districts that have improvements on their lots. So this is really important in the wildland-urban interface in that those landowners are paying a surcharge. Currently this year, off the top of my head, it is about $72 for that, for an improvement on a lot. And the reason that is when those improvements happen within those areas, if you have a home, we have to change our tactics in regards to how we fight wildfires at that point in time. And you can't go from a road line and burn it out if you have a house setting above. You've got to try and put some kind of protection in place before the fire comes down through those structures. It raises our cost, and so that's the basis for that surcharge.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Yes,
I'm just trying to understand. Obviously, help me out here. That you have some base assessment which pays for what you know are your fixed costs for their portion of it, but you have a fluctuating cost based on when you get into this deductible range. Sometimes it's $8 million, sometimes it's $13 million. Is that coming out of your base levy or? Is this the surcharge you're talking about where you go back? And what I'm trying to figure out is if you have a surcharge, are you applying that to the private landowners, the public landowners, and the BLM? Does everybody pay the surcharge is what I'm asking.
Chair Klim, Representative Weingard, yes, that and it's not just a surcharge. It's an additional assessment. It's a surcharge on improvements. And then it's additional acreage assessment or lot assessment above that base level of protection. All landowners pay that, but it is a totally separate pot of money that pays for the system. The actual revenue that comes into that right now averages about $10 to $10.5 million. Now, that was changed in the last legislative session in that the actual revenue that came into it was just over $8 million. But with the large fires, we kept exceeding that amount, which was driving the fund down. Now, so what the fund will do is, if you had no fires, it will collect that revenue through that assessment process up to about $22 million. Then at $22 million, it will drop in half, and then at $32 million, I can't remember off the top of my head, if we collected that much money, then the assessment would start till the fund dropped down below. When it dropped down below, it would kick
it
back
stop
in.
Until
the assessments would stop.
Yeah, it would start. Representative Roebling.
Clarification. There is a separate fund that is landowner money, and in historical past, it's been able to keep up. If you look at that fund recently, because of these added expenditures, it has not been. So it actually at one time had a fairly good, and they actually cut back to the 50% at least once. They might have done it before that, but
yeah.
And then I think actually it did get all the way to the top and cut it off completely for a while because the fund was there. But if you look at the future charts, you're going to see that we've had a consistently rising ambient level of fire suppression every year, and so the amount that they're putting in now has been eaten away at to the point where that fund is not, I mean, they're very nervous about whether that fund has enough money for this next year. And I think you're going to hear other people talk about that later. But it has worked pretty well up to the recent past. That switch to $15 million and the fact that they've eaten into that almost every year has made a really difficult time to keep that fund at its previous levels.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You talked about, I'm not interested in increasing this assessment. I'm not interested in increasing this assessment, to be quite frank with you. And when you talked about the California fires and how they spent millions of dollars putting them out, I'd like to know how many acres was just sagebrush and how much of it was loggable land. We've had millions of acres of loggable land in this state go up because, to be quite frank with you, our incompetent system we have going on here, and I'll take my share of the blame for that. I wish others would, but to be quite frank with you, and that was almost all loggable land. The best fire suppression we can have in this state is managing our forest, and that means logging, including clear cutting. Great, you want to be selective about it, you want to go out and get cellulosic fuel stock, great. I don't care what we do. I'm constantly being asked to be open-minded about revenue in this state, and I have a voting record proving that I am open-minded about it. But when I ask those very same people who are hammering on revenue in this state to be open-minded about logging, land, water, industry, energy transmission, and the siting of all of that, they are closed like a trap, minded about it. We are out of balance here. And science will prove, pictures, visual sight will prove that a managed forest does not burn in huge, raging fires relative to an unmanaged forest. And if these folks were out there, had their mills running like gangbusters, I'd be far more open-minded to changing that assessment. But I'm closed-minded, getting increasingly closed-minded on that concept. But God bless you and keep up the good work.
I just want to clarify one thing that Representative Shoffler just said that I generally agree, but he mentioned how badly we've been burning up our forests. And I would contend that we have been doing a better job than any place on our private and state forests. Now, I won't comment on the federal forests because they have not done as well. But I will comment. I want to make sure that there's a distinction about what's been burning up in Oregon.
Yeah.
And
thank you, Rick.
Because of what we've been doing, we do a really good job of not burning up our forests.
Thank you for that.
Yes, we do. Representative Wingard.
Chief, that gets to a question that I've been waiting for you to finish your presentation so I can ask. You have a lot of charts on here about costs and assessments and what starts fires. What I'd like to know is where they're starting. I don't see a chart on here on the origin of forest fires that we're battling in this state. Private land, state lands, other state public land, you know, and federal lands. It would be interesting to see a chart of where these, all these fires that we're dealing with are coming from.
Representative Klim, Chair Klim, Representative Weingart, we can provide that information for you and give you a good spatial distribution of those over a few years. But state fires, or state fires, were responsible for start on all lands at different frequencies. As you look at a year, depending on the severity of the fire season, that can vary across the state. So, like in 2007, eastern and central Oregon were hit extremely hard. So on private land, we had several mini fires, almost all lightning started in that year. Last year, we had a combination of lightning starts and operator and public use starts. So, I mean, it varies by year. These are 10-year statistics as you look at them. I think an important point in that is you look at the landowner started fires. That includes escape debris burns from landowners paying assessments. So in that urban interface, there's higher percentage of those. We've, in fact, I think Mary Helen from KOG will talk a little bit about the issues we have with those types of fires. As a graphic display, the best thing?
Mr. Chair, follow up. What I'm trying to get at here is, I mean, the theory that's being put forward by some members that I don't disagree with is that unmanaged forests are a hazard. And so, I would think that would show up in some of our statistics about where these fires are coming from, and especially the more catastrophic ones. Obviously, you can have 100 fires, but if 90% of them are small, or manageable fires that require limited resources to put out, and one is a fire that starts on federal forest land that burns millions of acres and is catastrophic and extremely expensive. I think that's helpful to know. And to further the point, I think if we're talking about changing assessments and changing the burden of those assessments, if the fact the federal forest lands are poorly managed and they're costing us more money is the reason why we need more funding to fight these fires, I am extremely uninclined or disinclined to place the burden for that poor management on private landowners by increasing their assessment to fight these fires they're not responsible for.
Chair Klim, Representative Weingart, that's a real good point. I want to be the statistics I have are just Department of Forestry statistics over the lands we protect, and I will provide you the federal fire statistics for their fire starts. The huge issue we have with the fires in with the federal agencies is within the unmanaged forests and the huge extreme fuel buildups that have happened. What happens is those fires get started, and where the state is at risk then is if they burn off to the Forest Service onto us. We're not paying for them when they're on the Forest Service. So two prime examples I'd use is for this last year is the Gnarl Fire on the Mount Hood National Forest. That fire started in the wilderness area. They attacked it. They worked it. They rained heavy. They thought they had it out. And then it came back to life. And when it came back to life, it threatened Cooper Spur and another sub-development in that area. So the expense to the state that starts ticking at that point in time is, one, we're moving resources in to be prepared for that. We're negotiating with the Forest Service to have our people work with their people, which we did on the Gnarl Fire, which the Forest Service paid for us to do that, so we didn't incur costs. But when that fire breaks off that forest, then the states were paying. And now in some instances, we can negotiate with the Forest Service as that's coming out of a wilderness area and onto us. In certain instances, we can negotiate, and they will pay for those costs. Your point is really good. I want to, I need to probably shut down here pretty quick.
lots of members of the public
right.
want to talk.
But I do want to point to the charts on page 6, and it gets right to Representative Weingart's point, is that you look at the top chart, that shows the cost by cause of the different fire starts. Lightning is by far the largest cost driver in our fires. Multiple lightning events just bring us right to our knees in those instances. But then you look at the bottom chart, and what that shows is that biggest chunk of the pie is about 0.64% of the fires we have, but we're spending 66% of our expenditures on those large fires. And so as you look at the system, you think about this, where you can save money in this is quit having large fires. And if we have the capacity on the front end to catch these while small, we can save money. So,
Mr. Chair. Or the force are more resilient. So, yes, but we've got a bunch of people. So I've got like 4 ahead of you.
Go ahead. Right. I'll wait.
So any final thoughts?
Chair Klim, members of the committee, I really appreciate you folks having this opportunity to have the informational hearing. Something I can't stress enough, I've been in this, actually worked for Hood River County Forestry Department for about 8 years, but I've been in this system for a long time, and this Oregon system is so successful because, and it's so unique and different from any place else you go, in that it is truly a private landowner partnership with the state of Oregon, and it's entwined, and it needs to be supported to keep us effective.
This is just, I would be remiss in not saying that all of this protection is not done just by the state. We do have 2 private districts that the fire control people are local entities, and that's in Coos and Douglas counties. Is there another one over in the Bend area?
Chair Klim, Representative Roble, yes, there is. There's Walker Range,
right.
And I did mention those at the front end of the testimony.
Yeah.
Great. Thank you for coming. If we have time, we may have you back up for final questions. We have lots of experts that we'll probably be talking to here. Okay, so Ray and Christine, you want to come up together? And we'll, not the huge time savings, but we'll save some transit time.
Katie Fass was going to be here. Right. Was not going to be here, so I wonder if Mike Dykes from OFIC could come up.
Sure.
Also. He can cover the points that Katie was going to make.
Right. He identifies himself for the record so we don't mistake him for a Katie. Whoever would like to start tonight.
Oh,
Okay, I'll start, Mr. Chairman. It's Ray Wilkerson with the Oregon Forest Industries Council. We'll be brief. There are other people that have come away and want to talk to this issue also, particularly for the benefit of Representative Van Orman and Representative Wingard, who are new and may not be familiar with OFIC. We represent private forest landowners in Oregon. Christina's organization does, too, and kind of the division is we represent the larger private forest landowners, and the small one is association by... as you can tell from the name, represents some of the smaller ones. But most of our members, we used to have some publicly traded corporations that were large timber landowners in Oregon. That model's kind of gone away, and most of the large tracts of land are now privately owned, privately held, either through families that have been here forever or through some of the new ownership structures that have emerged in the last few years. But we represent the owners of about 5 million acres of forest land in Oregon, and this issue is very important to us and to them, and we appreciate the fact that you're giving this the attention that we believe it deserves. The handouts that are coming around, the one that I provided is just a one-pager with the OFIC and Oswald logos on top, and it basically talks about two pieces of legislation that will be before this committee, I believe, most likely. One is that you already have, and the other one's still at LC, and Christina will talk about the... specifics of those bills, I believe, and what I'd like to say about them is we believe that those two bills are closely related and very central to the discussion that we're having here this morning, and we would hope that the committee would consider them kind of as a package, that they kind of go together or don't go together. So I'd just like to give a little bit of background for our perspective of the program. You know, you've already heard, and we certainly concur, that we believe Oregon does have the best wildland firefighting system in the country, if not the world, and we're the only entity that can get insurance for it, which is kind of the proof, and you've heard that already. It's a confusing and complex system, as is already evident this morning, but it works, and it's been around a long time, and it works. It'd be nice to get it less confusing and less complex, and we've talked about that for years and never can quite get it done, but when the fire bell rings, you know, the fire department responds, and we put the fires out better than anybody else, so maybe we just ought to live with the confusion and complexity and leave it alone. But anyway, in large part, it's been successful because of the support of the state of Oregon and the legislature. I've been around quite a while in this building, and there's never been a time where the Oregon legislature, at the end of the day, no matter what the budget looked like, didn't adequately fund this program. So that's we appreciate the recognition of its importance. It's been updated and modernized several times during my time around here. The program is built on the concept of shared responsibility, a partnership between the private forest landowners and the state. And, you know, if you don't buy into that concept, I guess this discussion won't go very far, but we do believe that there are justifications for the general public participating in this program. And just off the, you know, in general terms, there's a couple reasons for that. One is there are public values at risk to forest fires. There's air quality, water quality, fish and wildlife habitat that exists on private land. We're required by the Forest Practices Act to protect those values, and those benefit, obviously, the general public, not just the forest landowners. So for that reason, they have an interest and a reason to be wanting to have a good system to put the fires out. And the second reason is the public starts a lot of the fires, as you heard already, so for that reason. The other, in terms of public values, and one that we didn't talk about very much until the last few years, is carbon sequestration. But clearly, the recognition that forests play a big role in sequestering carbon has become more and more apparent to people, and that's another good reason to make sure our forests are green and not brown. So that's kind of the basis of the system, or the philosophy, I guess, of the system, why this concept of shared responsibility has been maintained over the years. The reason we're here today is because the last major overhaul of the system occurred in the 2005 session, and it followed an extensive interim analysis of the program called the Budget Note 3 Committee in 2004. And the reason that the system needed an overhaul at that point was triggered by a couple of things. One is 9/11, which really broiled the global casualty insurance markets. They just turned everything upside down and made the ability to retain the kind of fire insurance policy that Oregon had for years problematic just because of global circumstances related to terrorism. And the second was, following that, we had a very bad fire season in 2002. which really, you know, we had a large claim against the insurance policy. Those two things together changed our relationship with the insurance industry and made it necessary to take a look at our system. So the 2003 session put a Band-Aid on the problem, created this interim committee, which was very exhaustive. Former Representative Susan Morgan and former State Senator Kurt Schrader chaired that committee, and it was very thorough and came up with some very good proposals that were implemented in the 2005 session. The real problem was, in terms of the insurance, that we'd had a policy with a $10 million deductible annually for years. That became no longer available. The insurance industry said either you got to raise your deductible, or we either can't insure you, or the cost will be prohibitive and you wouldn't want to buy it. So we had to, if we're going to continue to buy insurance, we'd had to purchase a policy with a deductible that was higher than $10 million. So that's what that had to be done, and the question was, who's going to cover that? You know, is it the state or the landowners? And that, under the umbrella of the shared responsibility. So that committee recommended to the 2005 legislature, which was agreed by the legislature, that the several things. One is that the landowner's exposure to these emergency fire costs would increase from $10 million to $15 million. And that's, we've talked about that today. That piece of the legislation included a sunset. So every 2 years, the legislature has to look at that again and decide whether or not that's still appropriate to have that increased exposure. And that's the bill that's already in front of this committee, I think, 2215. The other decision was made was to increase to have a significantly larger deductible, the $25 million deductible, which greatly reduced the premium costs, which allowed to free up some general fund money to purchase the severity, the helicopters and the retardant airplanes and that sort of a thing. And then the final piece was to split the cost of the insurance premium, which is much lower than it used to be. It used to be about $3 million a year. Now it's $1 million a year because of that $25 million deductible, which is quite high. So that's what happened in 2005. In practice, you know, I think the goal of the interim committee that created that legislation in 2005 was to have true shared responsibility, get as close to 50-50 as possible. The state pays half, the landowners pay half. And as we've already heard, even at that level, if it could be achieved, the landowners are on the hook for a lot larger share of the overall cost than in most states. One little anecdote to put that in a perspective. My counterpart at the California Forestry Association told me that in calendar year 2008, the state general fund in California paid $500 million in fire costs. They pay the whole freight down there, and that's what it costs of taxpayers of California. You've got a, you know, $50 billion deficit staring them in the face. So, you know, that puts things a bit of perspective. You know, the state here spends, you know, $20 million roughly for this program, and it's just very small compared to some of the other states. So the reason we're back before the legislature with these two pieces of legislation is because that goal of 50-50 hasn't really worked very well, and it's just a function of how the system has worked. We asked in 2005 that sunset be put on so that we could, you know, take a look every 2 years, see if it was going to achieve the goals that it was intended to. And unfortunately, it hasn't. So the ratio now is much more weighted towards landowners than it is to the state. In practice, the major reason for that is because of the way the insurance deductible is applied. And Christina and Mike can talk a little bit about that. So that'll be my part of the presentation.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. For the record, my name is Christina McNitt. I represent the Oregon Small Woodlands Association. We represent family forest landowners who are identified as those owning between 2 and 5,000 acres of forest, but statistics show that 60% of those owners hold properties of 10 acres or less, and nearly two-thirds are more than 55 years old. More than half of them are over 60 years old. Non-industrial private forest landowners are an important part of Oregon's total forest resource base. We represent almost one-half of the privately held forest lands across the state. In addition to producing approximately 16% of the timber harvest annually, these acres also clean our air and store carbon, support healthy watersheds, furnish habitat for wildlife, and provide opportunities for recreation and, Mr. Chair, for hunting. Most firefighting discussions always focus on costs, and my testimony will do the same thing. But often overlooked are the complicated funding structure is the very real devastation that's wrought by fire. Oregon's fire insurance does not insure the trees, and it doesn't recover loss in the event of a fire. Oregon's policy solely provides protection for the state general fund to recover the costs of suppressing catastrophic fires. That's what the insurance program does. It does nothing for the landowner. For landowners, there is no insurance on the market to protect trees from fire. So unlike you as a homeowner, when you buy your home insurance policy and you can have coverage for a fire, a forest landowner does not. So lifetime investments literally go up in smoke, and I hope that as we continue to talk about fire funding and the costs, we consider and keep in mind that the real equation to landowners is cost plus loss. Since 1904, landowner participation has been the foundation of Oregon's successful system, but today, honestly, the system is at a tipping point. While district readiness costs at the local protection association levels have been shared pretty much at the 50-50 level between landowners and state, the costs of suppressing large project fires that overwhelm the local association are escalating. At the same time, climate changes have extended the fire seasons and almost doubled the number of at-risk days. When local protection districts are overwhelmed by a large fire, they turn to the Forest Land Protection Fund, which you've heard about here. The fund's comprised of six separate streams of landowner taxes. In 2007, as a community, we supported increasing every single one of those taxes 25% across the board because the Forest Land Protection Fund was not bringing in enough revenue to meet our obligation of landowners to hit that $15 million deductible. I actually have included a rate in the second page of my testimony because it's fairly dramatic. It includes a forest products harvest tax, per acre assessments on grazing land and on different types of timberland, a minimum lot assessment, and one that particularly hits the non-industrial forest landowner more strongly is the improved lot surcharge at $47.50 a lot. And the reason is about half of those forest landowners live on their farm or have some sort of improved structure. Despite this increase, however, the fund still went broke. Last year, we were $5 million in the hole. And in the fall, the Emergency Fire Cost Committee, which administers the Forest Land Protection Fund, sent out a surcharge to landowners, which combined with the 2007 increase, totaled a 58.3% increase on landowners. Fire costs, especially in eastern Oregon, have escalated beyond the production value of the land for its resource use. In several counties, district fire assessments are larger than any other portion of a landowner's tax. And I would like to bring your attention. Attached to my testimony is some testimony that was provided to the Board of Forestry about 6 months ago on this very issue. Landowners are finding it increasingly difficult to meet their obligations. On the first page, I'm just going to bring your attention to one and let you thumb through it on your own. But Lyle DeFries, who 88 years old, Mike, he's a landowner, and he has some comparisons on his 893 parcel of timber property. In 2002 and 2003, the fire patrol assessment was 90.8% of his total property tax. In 2007 and 2008, it went up to 91.2%. And in 2008-2009, the fire patrol assessment portion of his total property taxes is 92.9%. It's fairly shocking the amount of money on an annual basis that a landowner has to meet to cover the fire protection. And you have to ask yourself, how does someone recover that cost in a production value on that property? Since 1993, total landowner costs paid out by the Oregon Forest Land Protection Fund for severity preparedness and fire suppression comes in at just under $137 million since 1993. Total general fund dollars for the same purpose, remember this was our attempt at parity, totaled $26.5 million. So the elusive 50-50 cost equity has actually morphed into an 84% landowner versus 16% state general fund partnership. And Mike's going to walk through some charts for you that demonstrate that. In conclusion, I would just like to suggest that there are ways to reach equity, and they could be rebalanced this session simply by looking at the deductible portion of the insurance. What the budget note number 3 committee did trying to reach the 50-50 relationship was, and if you look at the budgets, it appears that there is a balanced relationship, but the general fund is a proposed potential worst-case liability. We've never even tapped into that. Yet every year, the Forest Land Protection Fund is tapped almost to its max, and this year, $5 million over its max. So rather than having the private Forest Land Protection Fund dollars pay the whole $15 million of the deductible from $1 to $15 million, we propose starting that 50-50 relationship from the first dollar paid in. So the deductible could still be $25 million, but rather than depleting the landowner fund first, we would do that in a partnership. So in a nutshell, that is what the contents of LC 2414 will contemplate. We hope to have an opportunity to have that discussion in front of this committee, and that is linked to House Bill 2215, which already resides in this committee, which would extend for another 2 years the increase in the deductible, excuse me, from $10 million to $15 million. So we would like both of those items discussed at the same time. In conclusion, I just want you to know OSWA does support funding fire. We have a strong history of doing that as landowners. We're actually, we do appreciate the Department of Forestry's work on private lands and feel we have a great system. We're priced out of the system right now, and we need to look again at some equities to keep our forest landowners on the forest land base. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, with your indulgence, I got the challenge of the chart that was passed out. If it's to your pleasure, I could kind of pinch hit, since I'm the one that kind of put this together, and the confusing nature of how difficult this is to follow, this is my version of how to put it into perspective.
As long as you identify yourself, Katie.
Hello. For the record, Mike Dykstel, I'm the Director of Forest Protection for the Oregon Forest Industries Council here in Salem. And just to pinch it behind is very confusing. I think everybody can walk through and understand that it's very complex. My chart here has been designed to get at some of the things that Representative Roblin has hit on, Representative Wingard has hit on, Representative Clem. Y'all understand it, but it's so complex and so intertwined. This was my effort to describe, when we talk about extra suppression costs above the district budgets, what are landowner costs and what are the full mantra of a variety of general fund costs when we try to get to an equity view. So the green is indicating landowner, all pure landowner dollars. The first column is, as we talked about, the insurance premium prior to and after the sharing of that premium cost. The next column are all the actual suppression dollars that were all attributed to the landowners during that 93 to current period. And then the third column is, what is the roll-up of insurance premium and landowner costs? Everything you see in blue is what general fund has contributed into the system during the same time period. The first column being, as you can see, there were a couple of years in 94 and 96 where the landowner fund went belly up and the general fund paid for the cost of the insurance premium. So I wanted to make sure everything was included that could be included as a general fund contribution. The next column is suppression costs that were paid by the general fund. As you see, there was 1 year there in June of 03, because the insurance time frame is from April to May. The fund had expended its limit during that period and had a spring fire still in the insurance period, which I believe was the Austin fire outside of Eugene. And so there was $1.3 million that was actually paid by the general fund for suppression. The next column, as you see and we've heard, the new concept of severity, providing the availability of air tankers, helicopters, move up again referencing the shared premium. So you see a few years in recent history what has been spent in the spa. And then there has been, obviously, e-board requests during that time frame. And then the last column is the roll-up of all those costs, general fund. And what Christina has said, and she quoted very accurately, during that time period, there's been $163 million of extra suppression cost, $137 million being on the landowner side, $26.5 million on the general fund side. So that equity is 84 landowners, 16% general fund. And then the kind of first gray line you see there, this is the world before the 2005 legislative session where the landowners paid 100% for the deductible. And what you see in the last couple of years is the new world we live in, shared insurance premium, spa. And what you see at the very bottom is the breakout of percentages that we, budget note 3 got us in the right direction, but it didn't quite take us far enough. It's gone from 84 to 79%. So we're on the right trend. The second chart is just a year-by-year scenario. Once again, the same colors.
Just one moment, Representative Wingard.
Yes, sir. I just want to understand, this is over and above, but what is not calculated in the overall cost here is just the district's budget. That's the only thing we left out of here is the district's budget. And as far as I understand, you pay a portion of that as well.
The district budget for private lands are covered 50% general fund currently, landowner, and general fund. So this is all over and above. This is whatever the local district can accept on their own. That's when they need extra help for the big fire.
Here, I follow up. I was just trying to make the point that whatever you're not including here, you're splitting half and half. So that is, you would concede that's an equal distribution, and then this is what is the unequal distribution.
Correct.
Above and beyond that.
Correct.
Thank you.
If I may, real quick, the second chart is just a year-by-year depiction of how that balance is going. And I guess what I'd like to see is the takeaway message for today in this open discussion is the third page. This is the cumulative effect of the splits that are taking place, same color code again, the green being the landowners, the blue being the general fund. And I guess, to me, that's the takeaway message for today.
Mr. Chairman, could I make one comment on that?
I'm afraid to hear, but yes, you probably need to.
Hopefully not to add to the complexity, but maybe minimize it. The way I've always got my mind around this program is that there's two parts of it. One part is the fire department, the cost of maintaining the fire department. That's the 50-50 general fund and landowner budgets. And then the cost of putting out the fires is the second part, that when they get big. Little fires can be absorbed in the district budget. The big ones are the ones that really cost money, and that's what these charts illustrate. So those are the major suppression costs. So if you add the two together, the ratio is about 2-1. We pay 2/3, the state pays 1/3, roughly.
And if you took that analogy in you know, at your home, this would essentially be like sending the person a bill after the fire department was done for 90% of the cost of whatever it costs to save their home.
Right, Mr. Chairman.
You pay nothing, which is what actually is reality in the private residential market. You know, their insurance company would help rebuild it, but the fire department doesn't send you a bill for coming to save your house.
That's exactly right.
So, no.
Mr. Chair and members, another thought, too, on the base protection association level. We were just chatting. I think that somewhere between 94 and 97% of the fires are actually captured on the local level, and they're able to handle those. So it's just a small percent of really large fires, but they are killing us.
And if I could clarify, it's the protection standard for the Department of Forestry is 94% of the fires will be caught at 10 acres or less. Is their protection standard, and for most districts, they are meeting that goal. There are a couple of districts, and maybe to Representative Wingard's question is, where are these fires occurring? If I could, 80% of this $163 million is being expended on four Oregon Department of Forestry districts: Southwest Oregon, Klamath Lake District, Central Oregon District, and Northeast Oregon District. 80% of those costs are occurring on four districts, and what Christina offered was some of those districts having the loss of infrastructure and the ability to pay those rates is becoming unbearable. And one other point, and it's embedded in Chief Bell's testimony, one of the charts, it's just an eye-catcher, is 66% of this cost occurs on only 0.63% of the number of fires. Huge amount of fires. huge amount of cost on a very small number of fires. So once again, you can save a lot of money by getting to fires and keeping them small. That's the other takeaway message as well.
And having healthier forests, so they're more resilient.
Yeah. Most definitely.
Yeah. You think?
Yeah.
All right. We're starting to get into where I want to at least do questions for you, because we've got five members of the public who want to testify as well. So questions for this panel. Representative Schaffler.
Well, essentially what we're doing is we're just driving people into bankruptcy and making the land worthless. They can't even take their logs anywhere in eastern Oregon. You can't make any money on it. I would like to find out if there's a statistic out there showing where these fires start, and they probably start in an unmanaged forest. Our good friend here from the department talked about some fire starting in a wilderness area. Well, you can't go in a wilderness area and do anything anymore. And increasingly, those areas are growing. So I wonder if there's any statistic out there showing where this fire started, and if it started on an unmanaged forest, and then how many of them started in an unmanaged forest and then ended up on privately owned forest and having to be put out by the people that are paying for it, even though they can't even manage the forest where it originated. I wonder if there's a number out there.
We don't have that specific numeric number for you, but anecdotally, you're absolutely right. And those are the fires. There were several last year that started in wilderness areas. And that's the other problem. Unmanaged is one problem because they're more fire prone. The other problem is wilderness areas. The federal laws don't permit aggressive suppression. You can't use equipment. You got to walk in and all that kind of stuff with wilderness areas. And they have a kind of a let burn policy. Also, they try to determine, you know, some underburning is healthy for forests, and they try to make a judgment in some cases whether to put a fire out or not. If they think letting it burn for a while might be a good thing, and sometimes they often miscalculate, and that gets to be very expensive. And so it's a big issue dealing. We've been, you know, dialoguing with the Forest Service for years and years and years on this issue, and it's a big problem. I think they're becoming a little more responsive and listening a little bit more, but some of the laws that they have to abide by get in their way sometimes too. So,
Representative Van Orman.
One of the challenges that I have living in Hood River is, what district are we in? Eastern Oregon says we're not Eastern. Central Oregon, we're not Central. And they try to throw us in Metro, and we don't want to be in Metro. So where would Hood River fit in this scheme?
Actually, go ahead. If I may,
Hood River is basically
exactly right. It's kind of in between. The rates actually are attributed to Eastside, but I believe it's the North Cascades District, which is headquartered out of Malala. I believe that territory goes up into that one.
We've got just one back for the record again.
It's in the for the record, Paul Bell, Chief of Fire Protection for Department of Forestry. Hood River is in the Central Oregon District and is administered out of the Dalles unit, which is administered out of the district office in Prineville.
Thank you. Thank you. And a comment.
Representative Van Orman.
I would like to say this, that living in Hood River as I do, last year's fire was very frightening because it was 12 miles from where I live, and we had a number of orchardists that were extremely threatened by that fire. And I can say, Chair Clem included. And I would like to say that we were all very grateful when it was put out.
Yeah, go ahead and identify yourself, though, Mike.
Katie Fast,
Katie.
Oregon Farm Bureau.
Mr. Chair, you can tell the difference by the hairdos.
Yeah,
thank you, Representative Krieger. and I have to apologize for being late this morning, but thank you for the opportunity to give the farmer's perspective on the fire program. This is a very important program for Oregon's farmers and ranchers because a multitude of them, along with their agricultural properties, have timber holdings as well. They might have land that's zoned farm forest, or more in the eastern Oregon area, they are grazing in a split situation on timber ground as well. And the timber holdings are important to the agricultural industry because it allows us to diversify our operations in years when agricultural crop prices might be down. They can go and harvest some of their timber property to help have a profit that year. And I would say some of these lands are probably at the most risk of being converted into other uses, more than full-time timber operators. I'd like to run through a hypothetical Central Oregon operation that would be in both a timber holding and then also in a 50-50 split with grazing. If a landowner owned a typical conifer block of land, about 10,000 acres in the Central Oregon area, this would be a low-growing site that may have rangeland or juniper components with a limited timber sale opportunity. As you're all aware, the opportunities of having a mill close by that you can actually profitably harvest that timber is limited. So the district fire assessments on the timberland would be for the 09 season $1.82 per acre. The grazing land assessments in that area for the 09 year is about a little over 77 cents. So for this 10,000 acre landowner, if all the holdings for the timberland would be $18,000, $18,209 per year would be what they're paying for fire assessment. What was that?
$18,209
for this 10,000 acre property. That is going to be probably higher than their property taxes on that property. This is not a high productive timberland. If the land was split 50-50 in grazing, that assessment would be $12,980 per year. As we look at the proposal coming forward with a 45-55 split, that same ownership would increase the rates for timber holding only to $20,029.90. So we're looking at almost a $2,000 increase per year on the timber holding only. On property that's a 50-50 split with grazing, we're looking at $14,278. So again, about a $1,500, $1,700 increase in their assessment per year. And it begs the question again, how does someone generate this type of revenue to pay for the fire assessment when they aren't getting that type of productivity off their land, especially in this economic climate? Because while timber sales are down, we're seeing the agricultural commodities as well drop in the 2009-2010 season.
Let me ask you a question. There is no program or way, as far as I've ever heard, for just someone to just opt out of their assessment by agreeing to do something themselves, or
Chair Klim, we do have in the state some unprotected areas where they're not covered by fire protection. However, I would say that is a very controversial part of the state, because as we're looking at trying to get quick fire suppression and trying to get those fires compressed when they're below 10 acres, when you don't have a presence, how can that be done? I mean, in some areas it works with landowners, in some areas it's not going to.
Mr. Chair, just if I could make one quick comment, just to, this will add to the complexity, unfortunately, but even within fire protection districts, technically you can opt out, but nobody does it because the liabilities would just be huge if you did, and that also answers Representative Schaffler's question of why it doesn't require 36 votes to increase the fees, because we asked this question last session when we had a debate about the fire funding, and because there's technically an option to not to be part of the system, then it's not a mandate. But in practice, everybody's in because liability would kill you otherwise.
There's another opt-out, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Schaffler.
Thank you. When you're broke, you opt out because you got no money. You're driven from the land. Unbelievable.
I just have one last chart to point out.
Let me just get Representative Krieger's question. He's been very good this whole time.
I've been very quiet. Well, I got him sitting next to me. I don't have to say much anymore. we haven't talked about the expense that landowners have in providing their own fire protection on the property. They're required to have things on all, at all operations. I just wanted to identify that and talk about that a little bit. And the fact that I wasn't here earlier, but you were talking when I came in. I didn't know if anyone covered the fact about the history of the number of fires that are actually started as a result of a forest operation, which are continuing to go down. So just because a fire starts on forest land, both industrial and forest lands, doesn't mean it was caused by the logging operation itself. It's being caused by a hunter, a cigarette, somebody on a motorbike, or a host, you know, lightning strike on that land. Can you address those two things, somebody?
Mr. Chair, Representative Krieger, you're exactly right. And in fact, on that, it's about a third between public and then landowner starts on landowners through operations, which could be something like some sort of motor sparks of fire and lightning. But what's interesting about the landowner starts is that the department, and Paul may have more details, but the department is very good at recovering the costs of those fires because they identify the operator and they identify liability and they go after the landowner. So to the extent that those fires become project fires and they dip into the Forest Land Protection Fund, those costs are often reimbursed to the Forest Land Protection Fund, which is not the case for lightning strikes and is not the case for publicly or fires caused by the general public.
Just, you know, because I kind of live it, means I have some forest land, but we're talking about forest suppression costs and that tax we have, but we have a forest tax, a severance tax, a property tax, a state or federal income tax when you harvest. You'd also have possibly a death tax. We're still talking about what how that's going to affect us. And then you may have a special assessment like we do when you don't have, when the insurance doesn't cover it. And then when that little bit you got left, you better be planting trees with that.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so Katie, do you have one more thing, and then we're going to get to our
folks? How about you just handle questions with the committee? We can conclude our testimony.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you all.
So we've got one. Typically, for the newer folks, if you weren't familiar, we try and separate the folks who came more than 100 miles, move them to the front of the line. And so we have one person, our first person, Paul Harlan from Lakeview. And just for the rest of you who are wondering when you're up, Milt, Mary Ellen, Ted, Jerry, in that order. So, and we're trying a lot. Yeah, 5 minutes max, if that's sufficient.
Chairman Clem and committee members, my name is Paul Harlan, Vice President, Resources for Collins Pine, and I reside in Lakeview. I have some written testimony.
That's a lot more than 100 miles, by the way.
Well, it just said, are you over there? It's a ways from Lakeview to everywhere. I have 3 points I want to make this morning, and they're in the handout. And a lot of the testimony before me has addressed even some of those issues and kind of framed some of those. But basically, I want to talk as a private landowner in Eastern Oregon, in Klamath Lake, in the lower productivity sites on the east side, that these issues are real to landowners, especially with our lower timbered values, as the last panel had talked about, and they have consequences to the full members of the state of Oregon, not just us as timber landowners. The first point I want to make is that private forest lands are the backbone of a forest products industry in Oregon. And the second point I want to talk about is that our neighbors, as was discussed earlier by some of your committee members, some of our neighboring landowners' land management policies and their aggressiveness towards fighting fires have changed, and that has an impact on the private lands that we are surrounded by. And thirdly, that private timberlands in Oregon provide, they are truly the essence of who we are in Oregon. They are the quality of life that I think all of us enjoy, regardless of where we live in the state. They provide habitat, clean water, they cleanse the air that we breathe, and provide that quality of life. Second page in there, if you take a look at those, the two maps, it depicts the private and public or Forest Service timberlands in the state of Oregon. And if you look in eastern Oregon, which is eastern Oregon is not half the state, it's more like two-thirds or three-quarters of the state, you'll see that the preponderance of timberlands in eastern Oregon are owned by federal ownership. I think we're all aware of that. We're all aware of what that does do for us. The second map depicts the mills that the forest products industry facilities that existed in 1986 in the state, and the red are the ones that have since departed. So the green are those that are still remaining. I will tell you that two more of those green are actually red. I can't keep up on my graphs anymore. So as it had been talked to, the industry has shrunk in eastern Oregon, predominantly due to federal land management policies and supply. So the supply, the forest timberlands in eastern Oregon are absolutely critical to continuing the infrastructure that still exists on that second map. And that's where it's going to come from, and the protection of those lands is paramount. Protecting those lands and also keeping them productive. Second point I wanted to talk about is our neighbors shifting policies, as Representative Schaffler had talked about briefly. In eastern Oregon specifically, we are surrounded by national forest lands. Part of, if you realize the juxtaposition of private lands tend to be the lower elevation lands. Federal lands tend to be the higher elevation lands. The question came up about where fires start. One of the issues that we have in eastern Oregon is actually the higher fire regimes are in the lower elevations. Realize lower elevation in eastern Oregon is 5,000 feet. So it's a little different than we're used to, but it's 5,000 feet. The more severe fires are in the lower elevations, not necessarily the higher. So a lot of times they're burning uphill, but the higher fire starts are in the lower elevations, which actually tend to be on private. But that's it. It kind of changes the dynamics of what the statistics look like, I guess, is what I'm stating. The you'll see on page three a picture of a forest that we have upwind of us. National forest with catastrophic mortality and lodgepole, it absolutely takes your breath away, and I'm sure you probably have heard about that in the state of Oregon. Those kind of things are things that we all have to live with and work around. Eventually, those will be issues. They'll be issues for us. Those same forest health issues are present on our forests as well. So just because we're private, we're managing them, doesn't mean that we don't still have same type of issues also, but we do have the ability to be able to more timely deal with those. So one of the issues is working with the federal government to help ensure their aggressiveness in firefighting. The state of California, California Department of Forestry, is extremely aggressive in fighting fires. When they have fires, the state of Oregon has done a great job when they're in charge of fires as well. I will tell you locally that our 50,000 acres in Oregon are protected by BLM, Forest Service, and state. They have shared responsibilities. They've traded those responsibilities around. Locally, we have to deal with three agencies. Luckily, they all operate very well together. That's a good thing. The final thing is the quality of life that timberlands provide for all of us. That when we do lose these, we lose more than the value of the timber. We lose clean water, clean air. We lose the vistas. Unfortunately, I came over the Santa Ana last night in the dark again, or I like to be reminded of what it used to look like as we used to drive that. That will come back. But in eastern Oregon, especially on lower sites, that takes longer to come back. We're looking at, on our ground, we had a fire 2 years ago, 30 years before we have tree cover back on our ground with it being aggressively. 30 years to get that back. So it is important that the initial response is absolutely paramount we keep that. Finally, the issue of ownership, payment, and the ability to carry that, I will tell you, in these depressed economic times in the forest products industry, that there is not much on the lands worth much today in today's market. And even in eastern Oregon, they're not high values like there are in western Oregon in the productivity. It is absolutely imperative to keep timberlands for the essence of who we are in Oregon, that we help keep timberlands productive. And part of that is to control those costs that we have for fires. The only other thing we have versus bankruptcy is development, selling those lands for development. We all lose at that, period. I think even now in the papers, our environmental friends even recognize that that's the greatest risk to forests. Forest is not forestry, but the conversion of those. So I would encourage the committee, as you look at things this year, to strongly consider being aggressive in funding initial firefighting, and also recognizing that it is a investment by the people of the state of Oregon in who we are as Oregon, not just in private timberlands. Thank you.
Folks, because Paul came so far, I'm going to have a couple questions for him, but then after that we probably won't do it with the rest of the members unless it's just burning, because we got to get through
burning.
Four more folks.
Burning.
We got
it. Yeah, thank you. Representative Gilliam.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you very much for this very informative hearing, and I particularly want to thank you, Mr. Harlan, for coming so far. I have to quickly comment on your company, because in my view, they are, the Collins family and the Collins company are exactly what Oregon's private forest industry is all about, and their long history of not only providing jobs and good management of forestry, and then plowing back into the community. I happen to have been a fundraiser in another life, and the Collins Foundation has been so generous to this state. So it's a great company, and I know you've been there 23 years, and I'll bet you would agree. I guess my question, or at least the thing I want to underline from your testimony, and it might be better directed to our previous speakers, is how you keep coming back to federal forest mismanagement. Now, those aren't your words, those are mine. And I know we have to keep our eye on the ball, because we have to, first of all, have fire suppression and a fire protection. And I know we have a budget problem to worry about, but that's the sequence. But I keep wondering why we can't pull back and use the influence of Mr. Bell's office and of the other people that testified for a larger policy discussion. So I guess my question, if you care to comment on it, is how can we help you, and what do we need to know about putting pressure and putting a spotlight so that the federal government will finally see we wouldn't have to be doing all this suppression and protection if, as a friend of mine already articulated, we could open up those forests. And again, I'm sorry for the long comment. You may not want to comment on it, but that's...
Well, I would, Representative Gilliam, and I think, and it's in here, one of the things that we see as a very positive is the governor convened a federal forest lands advisory committee that brought different interests together, not just the timber industry, but wide varied interests together in the state of Oregon, and they worked through some pretty tough issues. They weren't able to tackle all of them, but I think that's a starting point for the state and its advisory in that, but I think that's a great place to start right there. I think the Oregon Department of Forestry is becoming more involved at looking at the environment around it as well, and in being involved, for example, in the red zone, is depicted in the dead lodgepole. So I think the first place to start is to key off on the Federal Forest Lands Advisory Committee.
That's excellent advice. We had a presentation of their report last week, or was it 2 days ago now? Just 2 days ago. Wow. And their first recommendation to establish a federal forest liaison and fund that program is something that, you know, obviously it's tight budget times, but I think we want to start trying to get there. And then on, I think, Thursday of next week, we're going to have the governor's natural resource advisor in to discuss an opportunity to help on federal forest lands. It's mostly west side, but it's the Western Oregon plan revision, so he's going to come and talk about that a little bit, and we'll have an opportunity to express our support for that plan. So thanks for coming.
Thank you,
Paul. Very helpful, very thoughtful. Okay, maybe we'll just bring the next three up all at once. Milt, Moran, Mary Ellen Hawley, and Ted Rice.
Mr. Chair,
yes.
While we're waiting,
I'd
like to take an opportunity. I have a couple guests sitting out here that have come to kind of shadow me for the morning. I have Daniel, who is a foreign exchange student from Germany, who is from actually Nancy, Representative Nathanson's district. And then I have Vanessa, who is also from Germany, and she is staying in my district. So I wanted to take the chance to introduce them and welcome them.
Representative Robin, would you like to welcome them?
Guten Tag, wie geht's? Or tschüss.
Ich liebe dich sehr.
I don't want to know what that meant.
I love you very much.
I'll find out.
Welcome. So, Mel, I have you up first.
Okay.
Okay. Great.
Okay. My name is Milt Moran. I'm with Cascade Timber Consulting up in Sweet Home in Linn County, and we manage the Hill Timber property, and that property has been in Oregon and established a trust in 1917 of the property we take care of. It's all in Linn County. I'm a director of timber sales and logging operations in our fire management, and I represent the Linn Forest Protective Association as chair, and I'm also the OFIC Protection Committee chair representing all the protection associations across the state. So I've been involved for the last couple of years with OFIC and going to a lot of meetings and listening to a lot of folks talking about these issues with fire. Appreciate the comments about the federal partners, our neighbors. We actually have a wilderness that we surround ourselves and other private landowners, and you know, we've opened dialogue with those federal partners to look at what would happen in some of these wilderness areas if fire started on there, or when fire starts on in those things. And there's just huge fuel loads, and we've talked about what we're going to do, and we've actually brought those federal partners out to the field and looked at what would happen if we did have a fire. And if you put enough pressure on those people locally, they will do things beyond what we normally would understand could happen in a wilderness area, such as motorized pumps, chainsaws, actually take a little bit more aggressive look at firefighting other than just let it go. And they've actually adopted that's what they will do for us if fire does start in that area. Firefighting is a very, very expensive operation. You know, the single biggest thing that we found in firefighting is the hand crews. Those we have to have so many, and we and the Department of Forestry have taken a look at all kinds of options, what we can do to pick up some better tactics and some better opportunities to mitigate some of those costs and keep those down and still put those fires out. Representative Krieger mentioned the fire trucks and things that we have to have out in the woods as part of operations. That's required by law under the Forest Practices and under fire program laws for operating during fire season. The landowners also have a tremendous amount of resources that we have, and not just equipment, but training and personnel and men and be able to operate with the departments, with the Department of Forestry, with the Forest Service, to be able to communicate and effectively and safely fight fires. And we also have millions of dollars of equipment that we have, and we respond also to those fires on or near our lands, and usually don't expect reimbursement for that. We realize that keeping fires small, getting them quick, working with the Department of Forestry to get them put out is a big thing. A small fire is a cheap fire and a safe fire, and that's really, really important. We talk about levels of protection and how we want to protect our property and what levels we want to keep that at. If we as landowners decide that the money that we're spending for our level of protection just isn't going as far as it used to, we'd like to be able to maybe assess ourselves a little bit more to go ahead and increase that level of protection or get that up so we're at least maintaining it. But our hands are tied because the general fund proportion can't keep up with what maybe we would like to do to help with that. So that's a real concern. When I talk to my principals, when they see the increases in assessments, they say, what are we getting? What are we getting for those increases? Are we getting more firefighters? We're getting better detection? We're getting, what do we have? I says, we aren't getting anything out there. We're just maintaining a level. And so, you know, you kind of get the deer in the headlight look, like that's where our money's going. So I do appreciate what the state forester is doing, and Paul Bell as chief, and they're doing a really good job with the budgets and keeping things tight at the Department of Forest. I think they're doing a really, really good job there. And I can't speak enough about the good work done locally. That's just really, really good. We are part of a complete and coordinated system, and I think that's very, very important. We've talked about it. I feel real good after listening to some of the early testimony that our fire system here in Oregon is working. It's a very good system. It is working. It's just that the funding part is pretty tough. The 50-50 match is there, but it's not working, as obviously with Mike's testimony about the more of an 86% to landowners, and that's pretty tough. Eastern Oregon talked about tough times, you know, getting rid of resources. We're seeing that here on the west side too. Right now, with current economic conditions, this is quite a time for us, and I'd offer, is anybody looking for logs these days? Because I got them to sell, so it makes it pretty tough. And what we're seeing, talking about those properties that have been in forest land and they're being sold for higher and better use, some of those properties then are creating all kinds of new issues with urban interface, fire management. You know, they need to stay in Oregon's forest land base, and they're leaving that base, so that's not a very good thing. Basically, you know, the Oregon's forests are good for all Oregonians, and we all need to do our part and protect those properties. And thank you to the committee, Chairman Clem, for allowing us to speak to you this morning. Thank you.
Thank you. Mary Ellen?
Yes, good morning, Chair Clem and members of this committee. My name is Mary Ellen Hawley, and I'm the... Oh, thank you. Sorry. I am the president and CEO of the Keep Oregon Green Association. And for those of you who are new, Keep Oregon Green was started in 1940 by the governor and the state forester after the outcry of all the millions of acres of Oregon's forest that had burned that could have been prevented. The Keep Oregon Green Association is a nonprofit organization, and we are supported by contributions from the timber industry, from our cooperative agreements with the federal and state wildland agencies, from partnerships and from grants and from people like you and I and the rest of the folks in this room that really care about Oregon's resources. Members of this committee, it never fails to amaze me when I go to the Forest Protective Association meetings and hear about all the thousands and millions of dollars that has to be spent on wildfire suppression. Careless human behavior causes 71% of Oregon's fires. Most of those are on small parcels of land and are started by the landowner who actually pay into the fire protection program. KOG and ODF have had a long-standing partnership, and we do have a cooperative agreement with them whereby Keep Oregon Green provides their statewide awareness and education programs, and we work closely with those in the field to help them whenever they need help, and they help me when I need help with some programs. Experience has shown us that prevention works, and I'm going to cite just one of the two that are on your handout. On the 4th of July in 2004, a total of 4 wildfire prevention teams were assigned to high-risk areas in Klickitat County, Washington. Prior to the assignment of these teams, up to 25 fires per year had occurred over the 4th of July on both sides of the Columbia River. So this prevention team was made up of Washington DNR and the Oregon Department of Forestry's the Dalles Unit. As a result, there were no incidents of fires that year in Klickitat County. Less than $180,000 was spent on these prevention teams that was credited with saving many thousand dollars in suppression costs. We know prevention works. The cheapest fire that has ever been fought is one that was prevented in the first place. And I'd like to give you one more quote from Dr. Hal Salwasser, Dean of the College of Forestry at OSU. Dr. Salwasser told me that green, healthy forests in Oregon sequester half of all carbon fuels emissions in Oregon annually. We need healthy, managed forests, and we need to have the humans responsible for their irresponsible behaviors and make us all more aware of preventing wildfires. Thank you very much, and if you have any questions, I'll be around to see you all shortly. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Ted.
Thank you very much. Members of the committee, Representative Clem, I appreciate the opportunity to be here today. My name is Ted Rice. I represent the Eastern Lane Forest Protective Association, which is an association of Eastern Lane County residents who own property. I also am a tree farm manager, do many things for Seneca Jones Timber Company. Probably have heard in the news recently, Seneca Sawmill. That is the parent company of the timber company I work for. We manage approximately 165,000 acres of private timberland in Lynn, Benton, Lane, Douglas, Coos, and Northern Josephine County, I believe. Do many things for the tree farm. In fact, my hands are dirt stained today from planting inspection work earlier this week. I always appreciate those opportunities to get your hands dirty. I'm also a member, I've been a member approximately 15 years of the Society of American Foresters, a national society that is and has its mission towards proper management of all forests in the United States, not only private, but public, and all other kinds of forests. Quite obviously, we're in difficult economic times. As luck would have it, I've been, I guess I got myself into it more than anything else. I'm also on the budget committee for the Bethel School District in Eugene. And this coming spring, we'll see how this all plays out, and I look forward to that process as well. And I have a range of duties in my life, and I tend to see things from several different viewpoints, and it gives me a lot better perspective on what's going on as a whole. So I know you can all appreciate that, and I'm sure you do some of the same kinds of things. Obviously, the increasing costs of fire protection, as we've heard many times over today, is a concern. It's a problem. It's something that we'll have to work through. I hope that you have not heard that we are asking for more and more and more all the time. I hope that you've not heard that we are asking for a California model of fire suppression funding. That is simply not the case. What we are asking for is some help, and for the state of Oregon, for the people of Oregon who use our properties for recreation and other purposes, obviously chasing wildlife, some of the other things that we don't think about every day, kids running to school, breathing clean air, drinking clean water, those kinds of things. We're looking for the folks of Oregon to stand up to their commitment to help pay for the fire protection system, because this is quite obviously one of the big impediments, especially for small private landowners, which there are many in Eastern Lane County. So what we're not asking for is the California model, where the general fund takes over fire suppression activities, where the landowners are basically kept from being an active part of the system. We have a very, very good system here, as you've heard. Primarily, that is due to an excellent agency in Oregon Department of Forestry. I know you've talked to those people, and you can see it in their faces when they give testimony and you shake their hands in the halls. Also, private land managers are there on the ground actually acting not only in budget meetings, in decision-making situations, but as well actively engaged in the firefighting efforts. Representative Krieger was asking about specifically what kinds of equipment, training, and those kinds of things we have to prepare for each year in fire season. I'll just run through those very quickly. Seneca Jones Timber Company has 165,000 acres of property, 22 people that are trained every year at a minimum of 10 hours worth of training. We have two tenders carrying large amounts of water. We have three engines carrying small amounts of water, numerous thousands of dollars worth of hose and fittings and fire pumps, and other personal protective equipment, and we actively work with ODF side by side because we have taken the same training to be on the same fires with our partners, of which there are many, and ODF and Douglas Forest Protective Agency, Coos Forest Patrol, Eastern Lane Forest Protective Association, and Eastern Lane ODF are some of them. We also spend quite a bit of time and energy and gas costs and our own valuable time on our tree farm patrolling for fire during the summer. So we are actively engaged in the process. Unlike many, or to be honest with you, any other agency, coordination and control towards protection and fire management. And I want to make sure that you heard that we're not asking for the state of Oregon to pay for everything. What we do want is a partnership. We want to be met halfway so that we can continue to be as successful as we are. And with that, I'll end my testimony and answer any questions.
Thank you very much. I think if we can just thank you for your testimony. It didn't look like, I think people know I'm anxious about the 7 remaining minutes, and we have one more to go. So thank you very much for coming.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Jerry Anderson.
Thank you, Chair Clem and committee. My name is Jerry Anderson. I'm the region manager for Forest Capital Partners in Northwest Oregon. Forest Capital manages 550,000 acres statewide, and out of our office, about 140,000 acres. A lot of the testimony this morning has referenced money and budgets, and which is very important. I want to speak about fire risk, and in particular, one aspect of fire risk. We've looked at, because of the poor economic conditions we find ourselves in, we have cut back on a number of projects that we do in the woods, and that has resulted from 2007 until 2009, 2 years, a 25% reduction in the number of people that we have working in the woods doing various projects that we have. The problem with that is that those are the same people that we use for initial attack on our fires. Many times we've had a number of small fires that people in the woods report. We send out fire equipment, but they've already put lines around, fire lines around those fires, and we've kept them small. Paul Bell spoke earlier about a very small percentage of the fires really caused the majority of the fire cost, and so keeping those fires small is very critical for us as private landowners and also as the state to keep cost control. That the economic downturn that I spoke about earlier, originally we thought that would get better this year, but it really doesn't look like that. It's like it's going to be down all of this year, probably into next year. So we're looking at another 2 years of reduced workforce in the woods, which is fewer resources to put these fires out. And I just want you to keep that in mind as you look at budget and money, but also that affects risk. That's all I had.
Good point. Any questions? I'm going to let comments too, but the questions for this person, Representative Schaffler.
Very brief to this gentleman in the panel before. The young lady that was talking about the 50% of sequestration of carbon in Oregon. I'm not a fan of all this talk about all these systems we want to put in place to do that, so I want to make that clear. But if we start handing out carbon sequestration credits, 50% of those credits should be distributed proportionately to the landowners who own forest lands in this state. The people should get those credits, not Enron, not Dubai, not some sheik from Saudi Arabia. To you, sir, back there, we need more people in this building that know what it's like to get their hands dirty and the value of that work and understand the business end of a shovel and don't think their toilet paper comes from Safeway. That's what we need in this building. But thank you very much for coming, too.
I think that was a rhetorical.
I want him to come down to my tree farm. I'll put you to work, Mike.
We've got 4 more minutes for soapboxes. One of them's done. Representative Roblin.
Yes, I just wanted to acknowledge the previous person who came from Keep Oregon Green Association,
yeah,
and the fact that she quoted a Oregon State professor, and I was hoping that Representative Clem would join the Keep Oregon Green Association.
I think I need to. I'm very excited. I hadn't heard about Smokey the Bear in a while. I was worried something had happened, so I'm glad to know that. The association still...
And you can also... There are people who would associate that with a different organization, and I know that you will as well.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Mr. Chair?
Do you know that you
have
a
no yellow in there? It's green.
It's green.
Can we change it to orange and black? Would that just be completely weird?
I would object.
How many legislators belong to Keep Oregon Green?
That's true. We need to get more.
Yeah. That's a good point. We'll have to ask our president.
Is there one on this panel?
No.
I'm on the board.
I have trees on my property.
Representative Krieger's on the board of Keep Oregon Green.
It's a great
work. Other final thoughts?
And as a father, it's Smokey Bear.
That's right. Not the. No the.
Forget the the.
No the bear. Smokey Bear.
Yes. Oh, Smokey Bear.
Bear.
No the. Sorry. All right.
Smokey Bear.
Okay, thank you. With that, I'm going to adjourn our committee. Thanks for coming, everyone.